Okay, we're going to begin here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Tzarich Ched Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, Chamesh Nashim Shinitarbu V'ladotehen. You have five women whose children were mixed up. Higdilu Hatarovot. So then they grew up, not knowing exactly who their mother is. They have a sense that it's one of these five women, but they don't know exactly. The Rashi, and here many of the Rishonim, discuss a case in the Gemara as well, B'michabeh, where these women were hiding. They were hiding out, and therefore they all gave birth at the same time in a location, but there was no way to identify the babies, and they got mixed up because of either the pressures or the movement or what was happening there. They don't know whose baby is whose. And therefore you end up with these five women, five children, but they don't know which one is their mother. V'nasun nashim. They go ahead and they marry. Umeitu. And then they pass away. Now each one of these individuals has other children. I mean, the women have children that they know for certain are their children. So they have Zecharim and Vadaim. So these children all have brothers. They know for sure. They just don't know which one of these is their brother. Because all these five women had male children they knew were their children. And in addition to that, they have another child who they don't know is a mix of one of these five individuals. So for sure, you have someone here who is their brother, Mina'av, from the father, or also from the mother, but the sense that they would have to perform Yibum, except they don't know who to perform Yibum with. Therefore, what do they do? Arba'a choltzim le'achat ve'achad me'yabeim. To each one of these wives, four of the brothers perform chalitza, and the fifth one goes ahead and performs Yibum. Four of them do chalitza to ensure that there's no Yibam al-Shuk in case one of them is really the Yabam. And then the fifth one goes ahead and can perform Yibum with this woman, Mimonavshach. Either he is the Yavam, and he's doing the right thing, or he's a third party, and they've already had Chalitza performed, and they can get married. So then, Hu v'shlosha chutzim l'achat, and then to the next woman. He, the one who performed the Yibum, plus three more perform Chalitza with the next woman, v'achad miyabim, and then one of them performs Yibum with her. Nimtzu arba chalitzot v'yibum l'kol achat v'achat. Each woman has four chalitzot with four of the brothers that don't know, four of these brothers who don't know who's their real brother. And then the last one performs Yibum with this woman. So you end up with five marriages. Each one of these children who don't know their mother got married. So they have five women here. So each woman will have four chalitzot from the four supposed brothers, plus one of those supposed brothers will perform Yibum. So Nagmar says, Davka michlatz v'hadar yivume. The order here is important. You first have to do chalitza, and then yibum. Aval yivume bereisha lo. You can't do yibum first, because then you're risking the fact that this really isn't his yivama, and he's marrying her before she was released from the proper yivam over here, and that's why you need to do the chalitza first, and then yibum. So now the Gemara says, Maihu v'shlosha chutzim la'achat. Why is it that you have him and three others perform chalitza? So what you could have done here is that you could have had one man marry all five of the women. You could have all four brothers, supposed brothers here, perform chalitza with all five of the women. And then one individual would marry all the five women. Why don't we advise that? Here they made each one separately marry one of the women. Mar says, Delote malivinhu chad lekulu. Don't have one of them perform yibum with all of them. Eloko chad v'chad miyabeim chado. Each one of them performs yibum with one of them. Dilma mitramile didei. Because then there's a shot that you actually get this right. So it's interesting here because you have, statistically, you have a balance here. If one individual performs yibum with all five women, you have yibum for sure. One of the five was definitely his yivama, and for sure he got yibum with one of them. The other four for sure he didn't, but at least with one he got it for certain. So the Gemara says, no, we'd rather you do one man with each, or one brother with each of these women, because then there's a shot that you could get all five right. But there's also a risk that you could get none of them right. So here the Gemara says that we'd rather you do the trade-off where you can have a higher chance that you'll get multiple Yibumim here that are correct, rather than take one individual who takes all five of them and gets Yibum for sure with one of them. So that's why the Gemara says that the suggestion in the Mishnah is that each one marry one of the women and not one individual marry all the women. Aside from the fact, and we saw this earlier in the Gemara, that we don't advise that. Meaning, monetarily, financially, we don't advise that a man will marry five other women. That's a big undertaking. And the Gemara before had mentioned up to four might be okay, but a fifth one is not sufficient. That might explain why chamesh is the number here in the Mishnah. Right now, mitzatan achin u'mitzatan shein achim. So there's a Tosefta, which is supposedly the continuation of this Mishnah. And there it says that if some of them are brothers, and some of them are not brothers. Achim chotzim, the brothers do chalitza, v'shein achim yabim, and the ones that are not brothers do yibum. Mar says, my kamar, this makes no sense. I mean, that it's very hard to interpret what this Tosefta is saying. So here we have an explanation. Number of safra, achi kamar, this is what it means. Miksatan achim min ha'av, u'miksatan achim min ha'im. Some of these individuals here are brothers to the father. Each one of them is definitely a brother to the father to one of these five individuals. Some of those brothers also happen to be achim min ha'im. I mean, some of these women either got divorced, their husband passed away, and then they married another one of the men that's there. And so they have an additional relationship here, which is that they are also brothers through the mother. If they are brothers through the mother, that will disqualify them from performing yibum over here, because there's a risk then that if they perform yibum, they're not going to hit their yivama, but they're actually going to hit their brother through a mother, which does not have yibum. Yibum is only performed with a brother through the common father, not through the common mother. So these individuals for sure cannot perform yibum. So what the Tosefta suggests is, those individuals who also have this other relationship, which will disqualify them from yibum, they should be the ones that perform chalitza. And then the achim that are min'av mi'abim, and those that are definitely brothers through the father should perform the yibum. So here, if you have the choice of who's going to do the chalitza and who's going to do the yibum, let's opt for the people who cannot perform yibum here to do the chalitza. And let's have the ones who are definitely able to perform yibum over here perform the yibum. And that's what it says here. That miksat achim min ha'av u'miksat achim min ha'im, achim min ha'im chotzim, the ones from the mother do the chalitza, v'achim min ha'av mi'yabmim. Now even those achim min ha'im are also achim min ha'av, but they won't help. Because since they're achim min ha'av and achim min ha'im to another brother, obviously not to the same brother, if they have common parents of av and aim, then it's no worse than achim min ha'av. It's here that you have a relationship with one of these unknowns is a achim min ha'av, and one of these unknowns separately an achim min ha'im. So that will disqualify him because he can't perform yibum because he's too risky. He could hit his ach min ha'im instead of his ach min ha'av. And therefore we're going to say to them, you do the chalitza and the others should perform the yibum over here. Miksatan kohanim u'miksatan shena kohanim. Some of these brothers are kohanim, some of them are not kohanim. Then kohanim chotzim, have the kohanim perform the chalitza and shenim kohanim mi'amim. And those that are not kohanim perform the yibum. Because here by definition we're going to have four chalitzot with this woman. So the Kohen can't marry her in the end anyway, because a Kohen's not allowed to marry Grusha v'chalutza. So the Kohen's disqualified here anyway. So let the Kohen perform the Chalitza, and let the non-Kohen do the Yibum in this instance. So as opposed to the suggestion of the Mishnah, where each one of them does four Chalitzot, and then he will marry one of those five women, over here we won't say that. We'll say that all those that are Kohenim should do Chalitza, and the non-Kohenim should marry the women, no matter how many there are, whether it's five, four, three, two, depending how many non-Kohanim you have here, they should perform Yibum in this case, because they're the ones who are able to perform Yibum. The others will only be able to perform Chalitza. Right? Miksatan Kohanim u'miksatan achim minayim. If some of the brothers here are Kohanim, and some of them have this alternate relationship, which is ach minayim, with another one of the children here, elu ve'elu chotzim velo mi'amim. Then you have no choice, because nobody here can perform Yibum. The Kohanim, because it's going to be post-Chalitza, and the achim min ha'im, because it's too risky that they might bump into ach min ha'im instead of ach min ha'av, and therefore everybody performs chalitza here to discharge these women. Right now, while we're on this, Tanu Rabbanan. Yesh choleitz limo misafek. There's sometimes that a person performs chalitza with his mother, misafek. Not that his mother is a safek, but because it's his mother and he's not sure of his mother, he ends up performing chalitza with her because of the uncertainty. They'll give the cases in a second. Nachoto misafek. Again, same thing with a sister. Even though, if he knew for sure it was his sister, he would not be required to perform chalitza. The problem is, he doesn't know which one is his sister. So he ends up performing chalitza for sure with his sister, because he has to perform chalitza with both these women. He just doesn't know which one of them is his sister. And the same thing with the bito, misafek. And now the Gemara says, ketzad. How does this work? Here's the case here. So, first case is, imo visha acheret. You have a woman and her another woman here, no relation to each other. Let's say that you have Yaakov married to Rachel, and Reuven is married to Chana. Yaakov married to Rachel, Reuven married to Chana. They both have male children. V'lahen shnei zecharim. They have two male children. V'chazur b'yaldu shnei zecharim v'michabeh. So they have two male children who they know for certain are their children, And then they have two male children that got mixed up. So for instance, Yaakov and Rachel have a child named Yosef, but they also have another one, a male child who they don't know is theirs or the other party. We call him Zachar 1. Then you have Reuven and Chana have a child, Chetzron, who they know for sure is their child. But they also have another male child, which they're not certain about. He's called Zachar 2. Then Yaakov and Reuven pass away. The fathers pass away. And then Yosef, the child of Yaakov and Rachel, goes ahead and marries Chana, Reuven's ex-wife. And the same is true in the reverse, which is that Chetzron goes ahead and marries Rachel, Yaakov's widow. So they're for sure they're okay because they're marrying a woman who they have no relationship to. So then they pass away. Yosef and Chetzron then pass away. Yosef is married to Chana and Chetzron is married to Rachel. They pass away without having any children. Now you're faced with a situation in which these Zicharim who are mixed up, who don't know who their mother is and they don't know who their brother is, they're going to both have to perform Chalitza with each of these women. So these two Zicharim are going to perform Chalitza with Chana and also with Rachel. One of those women is definitely their mother. One of them is their mother and they don't know which one is their mother. They're going to have to perform Chalitza. So that's the case of a person performing Chalitza with their mother, Misafek. Again, one of them is for sure their mother and they will perform Chalitza with her. The reason they will do that is because they're just not certain which one is their mother. But they will perform Chalitza with both of them. So that's what the Gemara says. Chazu yadu shnei zechim mechveh. Va b'na shel zu v'nasa imo shel zeh. U'b'na shel zu nasa imo shel zeh. Each one of them, the vadai child, marries the widow of the other party. U'meitu b'lo banim. They die without children. Zeh choletz l'shteyem v'zeh choletz l'shteyem. Chalitza to both of the women that remain. Nimsa kol echad v'echad choletz l'imo misafek. Each one of them for sure is having chalitza with their mother. They just don't know which one is their mother. One of the women they have to do chalitza with it. One of them is their mother. So because of that certainty, they'll have to do chalitza with both women. And that's how you get chalitza with a mother, misafek. L'achoto misafek. What is the case of achoto misafek? Ketzad. Imo v'isha acheret she'adu shtei nekevot b'mechabeh. So they were two women. They gave birth while hiding. And now you have these two female children who we do not know who they are. Uvawechem shalom eotayim. Brothers, not from that same mother, v'nasom, and they marry them. Umeitu b'lo banim, and then they die without children. Choleitz l'shtehem, you have to do chalitza with both of them. Nitzah choleitz l'achoto misafek. So this case is a case, for instance, where Yaakov is married to Leah and has Reuven and Shimon. Yaakov is also married to Rachel and has a child named Yosef. So these are all brothers through the father, common father. They have separate mothers. After Yaakov passes away, his widow Rachel goes in and marries Nachshon. Now Rachel and Nachshon, and you have another marriage, another couple, Chana and Kalev. Those are the two couples whose daughters got mixed up. So they were hiding and they had daughters and they got mixed up. Reuven and Shimon went ahead and married these two girls. Reuven and Shimon have no relationship to these girls because they share no common parent. They have a common father with Yosef. Yosef is a common mother with these girls. But Reuven and Shimon have no common parent with these girls, and therefore they marry these girls. Then Reuven and Shimon pass away without children. Now Yosef is faced, these were his brothers through the father, he's faced performing Yibum or Chalitza with these two girls. The only problem is he doesn't know which one is his sister through the mother, and he doesn't know which one is not related to him at all. The one that's not related to him he could perform Yibum with, or Chalitza. The one that is his sister he has to do nothing with. But because he doesn't know which one is which, he will perform Chalitza with both of them. That results in him performing Chalitza with his sister, Misafek. So that's the case here that the Gemara describes as being the case where an individual's Nimtza Choleitz Achuto Misafek. He ends up doing Chalitza with his sister, Misafek, because he doesn't know it's his sister. Libito Misafek, what's the situation or the scenario where it's his daughter? Ketzad, Ishtov Isha Acheret Sheldu Shtei Nekevot Mechbeh. Again, two women give birth in hiding to two females. Ubaucheem and Asum, and their brothers come along and marry them. Umeitu b'lo banim, and then they die without children. Zecholetz debito misafek, zecholetz debito misafek. So what's the case here? The case here is Yaakov has three children. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Three children. Reuven and Eshet Reuven have a daughter, which was one of these daughters that got mixed up. And then you have Kalev and Eshet Kalev, who also had one of these daughters that were also in the mix-up that was here. Then Levi and Shimon go ahead and marry these girls. Now, these girls are there. One of them is their niece, and the other one is just a outside girl. Either one of them are mutar to them. You're allowed to marry one's niece, so that's fine. You're allowed to marry a girl that is not related. So Levi and Shimon, brothers of Reuven, go ahead and marry these two girls, and then pass away without any children. In that scenario, Reuven is now faced with performing Yibum or Chalitza with these two women, because these were his brothers that were married to them. One of those girls is his daughter. One of those girls is not related. So he will perform Chalitza with both of them because of the uncertainty. But that uncertainty will lead him to performing Chalitza with his daughter, Misafek. Now, that's the way Rashi explains it. He brings a Lishna Meirabutai. He says that he brought another Lashon down, which he does not favor. I'll explain why he doesn't like it afterwards, but he says that the same thing happened on Kalev's side. Kalev and Esha Kalev, who had this mixed-up daughter, Kalev also had a brother, Nachshon. Say they had a common father, Yifunah, and he had a good brother, Nachshon. And Nachshon married one of these girls, and Levi or Shimon married one of these girls. So each one of the brothers, through the uncles, married these girls. So they either married their niece or an outside party. Then they both die, and now you have to form a chalitza with them. So the chalitza, again, is persons performing chalitza with these girls, one of which could be Bito, or one of which could be a foreign girl. Rashi does not like the interpretation here, because here, he only performs chalitza with one of the two girls, the one that married his brother. When he performs chalitza with the one that married his brother, the safek is it his daughter or not his daughter? So that's not performing chalitza misafek with one's daughter. That is safek if it is his daughter. And Rashi says that differentiation is not what the Gemara here, the examples are giving is, for sure you perform chalitza with your daughter. For sure you perform chalitza with your mother. For sure you perform chalitza with your sister. You just don't know which of the women is it. The way that it's described by his Rebbeim is that you're only performing chalitza with one woman, and that woman is a safek whether she is your daughter or not your daughter. And that's why he doesn't like that interpretation, because then the safek is about whether it is your daughter, not a safek that you're doing chalitza vadai with one of the two women that is definitely your daughter. So Rashi rejects that explanation based on that and says that he thinks the explanation before was the correct explanation. All right, so while we're on this, Tanya, Hayai Rabbi Meir Omer, Ish v'Isha, Pi'amim shemolidim chamesh umot. There are certain times where a man and a woman can have children, and these children will then result in five different categories, Ketzad, which is Yisrael shalakach eved v'shivcha min ashuk. Yisrael buys a Oved Kochavim and his wife through the marketplace. They're allowed to sell themselves, or someone else is selling them. So they are now bought as an Eved Knani and a Shifcha Knanit. But before they were purchased as an Eved and a Shifcha, Lahen Shnei Banim, they already had two children. So pre-becoming an Eved Knani or a Shifcha Knanit to this Israel, they already had children, two boys that were born for him. V'nitzgayer Echad Mehem, one of them converts. So one of those two boys converts. Those two boys are not affected by their sale of themselves as an Eved Kenani and Shifcha Kenanit or by someone else because they were not owned by the parents or they're not owned by the previous owner. So these two boys are independent, but they were born to this couple. So now you have one boy who is an Oved Kochavim and one boy who is a Ger. Then they go ahead and they are purchased as an Eved Kenani and Shifcha Kenanit. Then you have, in addition to that, they're now going to have children and those children that are born are going to be Eved Knani, or Shivcha Knanit, but here we're talking about males, so it's an Eved Knanit. So now what happens is, Nimsa Achad Ger, Ve'achad Oved Kochavim. Their previous children from before they were sold in as slaves, one of them is an Oved Kochavim, one of them is a convert. Hitzbilam L'shem Avdut, V'nizkaku Zelazeh. He, partial conversion, which is he makes them into an Eved and a Shivcha Knanit, which is they go to the mikveh. And then they have a child. That's a third child. That child is a Eved Knani. So now you have Arikan Ger, Voved Kochavim, the Eved. That's the three children they have so far. Shichreret the Shivcha. The Adon, the master, frees the Shivcha Knanit. She becomes now a full-fledged Israelite. Ubala Eved. But she stays, quote-unquote, married to her husband being an Eved Knani. That means now you have an Eved Knani having a relationship with an Israelite. That, Arikan, now you have four. Ger, Voved Kochavim, the Eved, who we all discussed already, Umamzer. The product of the Eved Kenani and the Israelite is a Mamzer that gives you your fourth case. Then, Shichrer Shnehem. Then he frees the Eved Kenani as well. Not only is the Shifcha Kenani freed, now the Eved Kenani is freed. Bisyan Zelazen, they got married. Harikan, then you have a, they have a child after that. That child is born to Israel, an Israelite, is a full-fledged Jew. So now you have Ger, Oved Kochavim, which are the original two children that they had. One is still an Oved Kochavim, one's a convert. Eved was from the child that was born after they were an Eved Kanani and Shifcha Kananit. That child that was born then is an Eved Kanani. Mamzer was after he freed the Shifcha. And the Eved Kanani was still there. They had a child. That child is a Mamzer. And then the last one is where he freed the Eved Kanani as well. They have a child that is Israel. So now you have five different categories of children, all born to the same parents. My Kamash Malan, right? Yechiel, what is this teaching us? Why do we need to know this? The answer is, Ovi Kuchamim Eved Abal Bat Yisrael Vlad Mamzer. So this is supportive of Shita of Rabbi Yochanan that we've seen earlier in the Masechta, as well as others of the Tanaim that believe that a marriage between an Eved or an Oved Kochavim and a Yisraelite results in a Mamzer, and produces a Mamzer. We don't paskin that way. We paskin that an Oved Kochavim and Eved that marries a Yisraelite, the Vlad is a Yisrael. It's a question as to whether he's an Yisrael Pasul or is an Yisrael Kasher the Gamre. But he's certainly not a mamzer. So according to us, in the halacha, we would only have four, not five. But they're pointing out here is that, according to Rabbi Meir, it's clear that he believes that Ovi Kochavim and Eved produce a mamzer when they marry a Yisraelite. Both. It's an Eved Kochavim and an Eved Kanani. Either one of them will produce a mamzer. Your question's fair because Tosafot earlier in the Masech, the back of the thing on Daf Yutet, discusses as to whether the mamzer is only a mamzer midirabanan or mamzer d'oraita. And he differentiates between Ovi Kochavim and an Eved Kanani as to whether the child that is born is an Mamzer Midoraita or maybe a Mamzer Midrabanan. Right now, Tan Rabbanan. Yesh Mocheret Aviv, Lag Boti Mok Tubata. So another one of these convoluted cases where it'll turn out that an individual will sell his father in order to pay his mother's tuba. Ketzad, what's the case here? Yisrael Lakach Eved Vishivcha Min Ashok. He purchases, Yisrael goes ahead and purchases and from the Shuk, an Eved and a Shivcha Kananit, and they are married. Lahem Ben. And prior to this, they have a child. Vishichreret a Shivcha. He goes ahead and he frees the Shivcha Kananit, Vinasa, and then he marries her. So this Israel purchased an Eved Kanani and a Shivcha Kananit who were previously married, and they had a non-Jewish child, a Ben that wasn't Jewish. Then, once they are Eved Kanani and Shivcha Kananit, he frees only the Shivcha. He leaves the Eved Kanani in place. Then the Yisrael who owns them marries the Shivcha Kananit. He's allowed to. Once she's freed, she is a full-fledged Israelite, and he can marry her. So he marries her. And he goes ahead and he gives as a gift all of his possessions to her son. Her son from the previous marriage when she was an Oved Kochavim and his wife. Then they have that son. He writes all of his possessions to that son. Nimtza. So in this case, if the Israel passes away, all of his possessions are with this son of the Shivcha Kananit, who's no longer Shivcha Kananit, is with him. Then he's got to pay his mother's ketubah. It's his mother's ketubah. She's going to come to the estate and she wants her ketubah paid. So he looks around the estate. He says, I have all these possessions. Amongst those possessions is his father. His father is an Eved Kanani. Right, was given as a gift to him by the Israel. So he could sell his father to pay for the ketubah of his mother. Right? So here, this is the case where he sells his father in order to pay his mother's ketubah. Maika Mashmalan. What does that teach us? Kula Rabbi Meir. First of all, that this is all Rabbi Meir. I mean, this is the second half of that Tosefta. Rabbi Meir is also the author of the second half of this Tosefta. V'avda mitaltale. And avadim are considered to be mitaltalim. Umetaltalim mishtabde de ktuba. And Rabbi Meir believes that metaltalim can be mishtabde de ktuba. That's against the position of the Chachamim, who believe that only real property is encumbered to a ktuba. Why? Because a woman, when she has in mind, when she gets married and has a ktuba, she only has her mind on property that she believes she will be able to get afterwards, or things that will stay around. Property doesn't move. So therefore, the encumbrance on the property she has in mind. Material possessions that get sold, moved, or get ruined, she doesn't have in mind because they won't be around. It's not something that she can hang her hat on and say that I will get this in the end. So because of that, we believe generally that metaltalim are not encumbered to the ketubah, but karka is. Rabbi Meir disagrees, and Rabbi Meir says that they are encumbered. Metaltalim are encumbered to the ketubah. V'baitema, akamashvan, avdo kimikarkei dami. So the other possibility is that it's not like Rabbi Meir, but it's like the Chachamim. And what you're telling us here is that the Avadim have a din like karka. And since they have a din like karka, Therefore, they are encumbered to the tuba. Now Tosfot says, according to the first position, where it's Rabbi Meir, he says that avadim are kemetaltalek. What happens around Shas? The entire Shas says, we have all over Shas, this idea that avadim are always, Eved Kanani is like property. As the Gemara says, based on the Pasuk, that you give them over as Yerusha to your children, that Eved Kanani is treated like property, like real property. So how do you differentiate here? So Tosfot says that sometimes there's real property that doesn't act like real property. And that's an Eved Kanani. He might be real property, he might be like Karka, but the fact that he can walk and he dies already means that the woman's not going to rely on that for payment of her ketubah. She comes into the marriage and thinks she's going to get paid out of this Eved Kanani. He might be dead by the time her ketubah gets paid. He might be freed by the time that her ketubah comes paid, so she won't rely on it. Even though he has a din like real property, she won't rely on that real property. Now, again, Tosafot hints at it here, but it's well known that in the time of the Gonim, they changed this din, that even though we paskin in general, that real property can be what's encumbered to a ketubah and nothing else, the Gonim changed that because of the dynamic change in society, which is that in the society that the Gemara is speaking about, everybody's a property owner. And the way that you saved your money or you deposited your money in the bank was you bought property. Property was the ultimate investment, and was the only investment that people kept. So that's why it was encumbered to the ketubah. Once you move into a society that's largely a trading society, and where wealth accumulation can be in monetary means, and a person could not own land, this guy could be worth millions of dollars and not own a single piece of property, they had to change the ketubah to encumber to metalkalim, otherwise the woman would have nothing. Because there was no real property, meantime the guy was extremely wealthy, and she had nothing to collect from. So the Gaonim changed that, the dynamic, because society had changed at that time, and therefore women were relying on money. People come into a marriage now, they rely on the bank account, they rely on the money that's there, because that is the measure of wealth now, not necessarily the property that is there. And so that dynamic changed. The additional thing that Tosafot raises here, which is a significant problem, is once you give a matana, and I think, Fred, you were hinting at this, once you give a present, why is this child encumbered to the ketubah? A present avoids that problem. A matana is strong enough that the shibud of ketubah has no effect. And therefore, why does he have to pay the ketubah at all? Once it was gifted to this child, it was gifted in the lifetime of the father, it's exempt. The shibud doesn't exist, so why does he have to pay it? So Tosfot explains over here that we must be talking about a matanat shchiv meira, not a matana of a bari, a healthy individual gave it as a gift, but rather someone who's on their deathbed, who gives a gift through his last will and testament, we assume that his oral instructions are as if written. So here he's a matanat shchiv meira. There, Chazal said that the matanat shchiv meira acts a little bit like Yerusha. It acts more like an inheritance than a matanat. Even though it's gifted in such a way that it has properties like a Yerusha. Now, Yerusha is encumbered to the mother's ketubah, and therefore, since it was a matanat shchiv meira, there really is a lien on this property, and that's why the son has to pay out the ketubah. Right, next Mishnah. Haisha shinitarei vlada bevlad kalata. So a woman and her daughter-in-law have children at the same time that got mixed up. So now you have a situation in which you have an uncle and his nephew that got mixed up, and we don't know who's who. Higdilu atarovet. They grew older. V'nasu nashim, and they got married. So they have no problem. They can get married. Just assuming they don't marry any relatives of either of them, then they're fine. Umetu. Then they pass away. Pass away without children, and now they're subject to Yibum. Bnei akala chotzim v'lo yibim. The children of the kala, his brothers, meaning the brothers of the nephew, they have to perform chalitza, not yibum. Shehu safek eshet achiv, because they have a risk here. The one that they're performing yibum or chalitza with can either be eshet achiv, his brother's wife, which would be permissible for him to perform yibum, or safek eshet achei aviv, or it could be his aunt. Meaning that we don't know which of the two boys this is. It's either their uncle or it's their brother. They don't know which one it is. So if they perform Yibum here, it's a risk that they're performing Yibum, or they're marrying their aunt, which is illegal. So therefore, they have to perform Chalitza and not Yibum. On the other hand, Bnei Azkena, the uncle over here, O Chotzim O Miyabmim, they can perform Chalitza or Yibum. Either one is fine. Why? Shesafek Eshet Achiv. One possibility is that's their brother's wife, and they're performing Yibum. Or the other risk is that Eshet Ben Achiv, it's their niece. And then they can marry their niece. There's nothing wrong with marrying their niece. Now what's interesting over here is that Yerushalmi concludes from here that there's no Easter in marrying your niece. So the problem is, why would there be an Easter in marrying your niece? A niece is permitted. So why can't you perform a Yibam with a niece over here? And why does Yerushalmi say, oh, from this you see that you can perform Yibam with a niece. Now this niece is different than a normal niece. We saw earlier in the Masechta that the Gemara says one of the best marriages is to marry your niece. Over there it was your sister's child, right? It was your sister's daughter that we were suggesting. Rashi and Tosafot argue there why it's your sister's daughter. Is that because that's the best marriage? Because that is someone that you're very similar to. Your sister, who's someone that you would like, therefore you would also like your niece, and that's why we promote that. Or is it because your sister is going to push you to marry the niece and your brother won't? So that either one is good, but they might mention the sister because that's the most likely scenario. Or is it because we really favor the sister over the brother? Meaning that your sister's daughter versus your brother's daughter. So here it seems to be supportive of this idea that we really promote the sister's daughter, that niece, but not the brother's daughter. Why don't we promote the brother's daughter? So there might be, because of this problem, there's a risk that if they pass away, there'll be a problem in Yibum. With the sister's daughter, if you marry that niece, there's no Yibum issue, because it's your sister, not your brother. But if you marry your brother's daughter, you marry that niece, then there's a chance that the person will pass away, and then his brother will be faced before Yibum with his daughter, which will not happen. So therefore, you're mafkia the mitzvah of Yibum. So you would have thought, don't marry your brother's daughter, or over here it's your niece through marriage, don't marry them because then you might result in a situation in which Yibum won't be performed because your brother will not be able to perform Yibum either because it's his daughter or daughter-in-law, both of which are problematic to him. So don't do that because you're going to be mafkia it from Yibum. Along comes the Mishnah and says, don't worry about that, that's fine. We don't worry about that eventuality or that problem possibly be mafkia Yibum. You can get married to the niece, and that's what the permission is over here. So, meitu akshirim. What happens in the other direction? The two that are the mixed up, here we talk about the mixed up ones pass away. What happens if the other way around? The uncles who know who they are pass away, or the nephews who know they're for sure the nephews pass away. What does the tarovet do? A tarovet livnei asakena chotzim v'lo miyabim. The tarovet to their uncles, it's either potentially their brother or their uncle, over there they for sure perform chalitza. Why? It's a possibility that it's his brother's wife, or it's a possibility that it's his aunt. So therefore, both of these boys who don't know who they are must perform chalitza with this woman. On the other hand, if one of their nephews passed away, one of the brothers of the daughter-in-law's children passes away, then one of them performs chalitza, and then one of them can perform yibum, because mimanav shach, either it's his brother's wife, or it's his niece, both of which are permissible to marry. We don't know which one belongs to which. Therefore, one of them performs chalitza to release her in case that is the yibum. And then he can marry her, mimanav shach. Either she is his brother's wife and he's performing yibum, or it is his niece and he doesn't need to perform yibum, but the one who was supposed to perform yibum already performed chalitza and he can marry her either way. Kohenet, shenitarev vlada bevlad shivchata. You have a woman who's married to a kohen, who has a child. At the same time, her shivcha knanit, who's owned by her husband, also has a child, and they get mixed up. As long as they are youngsters, they can eat truma, either because the boy is the son of a kohen, or because the boy is the son of a shivcha knanit and is owned by the kohen, and is kinyan kaspo. So both of them are entitled to truma. V'chokim chelech echad bigorin. And they're allowed to divide up one portion in the Goren, which the Gemara will describe why they'll be able to do that. Ve'ena mitamim lemeitim. Neither of them can be mitame lemeit, because one of them is a Kohen, one of them is a Eved Kanani. So one of them for sure cannot be mitame lemeitim, but we don't know which one it is, so neither of them are the mitame lemeitim. Ve'enam nosim nashim, ben ksherot, ben psulot. They can't get married to women, whether they are women ksherot or women psulot. Now you'd want them to marry women ksherot, because there's a possibility he's a Kohen. On the other hand, he can't marry a woman who's kshera because one of them is an Eved Kanani. An Eved Kanani is asur by a woman who's kshera. So, what you want to marry psulot, you can't do that because the kohen is one of them and he can't marry a psula. So they're both disqualified from marrying either kshera or psula because there's a risk in both directions. So what do? Higdilu. Once they become of age, atarovet, vishichru zed zed. They free each other. Each one of them grants freedom to the other with the safek that it's an Eved Kanani. So the Kohen, one of them is the owner because he's the Kohen, and therefore he has the right to free this Eved Kanani. So then he frees the Eved Kanani. We just now at this point don't know which one's the Kohen and which one is now a Israel. Nosim nashim ruyot l'kuhuna. They both have to marry women that are ruyot l'kuhuna. Now they're both available to marry. One is a kohen, and one of them is just a regular Yisrael. So both of them are permitted to marry kshirot. They can't marry psulot because one of them is a kohen, and it's too risky. Veina mitamim lemeitim. Both of them cannot be mitamim lemeit still because we just don't know which one of them is a kohen. Vim nitme'u in ansof gimet arba'im. If they do become tamei, we can't give them malkot because we can always say, it's not me that's the kohen, it's the other guy who is the kohen. Veino nochlim b'truma, they can no longer eat truma. At this point of time, you're dealing with a kohen and a Israel. So the kohen is permitted in truma, but the Israel is not. So there now, you can't have eat truma because one of them is a zar, and he can't eat truma, and that's a chiv mita b'dei shemayim. V'machlu inam mishalmim kerem v'chomesh. If they do eat it, they don't have to pay one and a fifth, which is the penalty for eating truma for Israel. Because each one of them could say, I'm the Kohen, I'm not the Israel, therefore I don't have to pay the one and a fifth. Now Tosfo points out over here, they don't have to pay it, they still have to separate it out, mishum kapara, because there's a risk that they did something wrong here, so maybe nobody has a claim against them to pay the money, but they still have to separate the money in order to attain kapara. You would have to separate out the money in order to assure that you got kapara here. Veinam chokim ala goren. And they're not allowed to go out to the goren to get truma. Why? Because one of them is not a kohen. If you allow them both to get truma, people are going to assume that both of them are kohenim. So we don't let them go out and collect in the goren. Omochrim et ha-truma. If they themselves have truma, they separate it out from some of their grain, truma. Now, generally with truma, it's a motziv mi-chavero la-varaya. Over here, one of these individuals is a kohen and he owns the truma. So you can't get it out of him. So what, misa fake, you're not going to be able to get this money from them. So what do? They sell the truma to kohanim, v'adamim shelahen, and they keep the money. So because nobody has a real claim against them, because one of them really does own the truma, the other one doesn't. We don't know which is which. So in this case, they'll both sell the truma out to kohanim, because it'll only be eaten by kohanim, and they'll keep the money because nobody can make a directed claim here. Anytime you make a claim against them, you'll say, I'm the kohen, you can't claim that against me, it's my food. They won't eat it because he's a Safek Yisrael and it's risky to eat the Truma. So they'll sell it to the Kohanim and then they'll keep the proceeds. Veinun cholkim b'kodshei ha-mikdash. Zichrei kuhuna get a portion in the kodshei mizbeach. They are not entitled to that because it's too risky. Again, one of them is Yisrael, one of them is not a Kohen. So they can't take it. Veinotim lehem kodoshim. We don't give them kodoshim. So now there's two opinions in Rashi as to what this means, and I'll come back and explain it. Bein motzim shelahem yadehem, and we don't separate it out from them if it's theirs. So now, the way Rashi explains it, the second explanation that he explains, and the one that he favors, is that we don't give them kodoshim over here means that we don't give them bechor and cherem. Bechor oats that are given to the kohanim, it's one of the matnot kiuna, and the charamim that go to the kohanim, you don't give to them. Because they're not full-fledged kohanim, so we're not sure which ones are kohanim, so we don't give it to them. But, if they have a bechor, or they have a cherim, im motzim shalem yideim, we can't force them to give it up, because they can say, it's my bechor, and I'm a kohen, and I can keep it. So then what will they do? The Gemara Mishnah will say in a second, is that you wait till it gets a mum in it, the bechor, and then anybody could eat it, and therefore the kohen can eat it at that point in time, it's a fake, they can eat it. Right, that's the story with Rashi's second explanation, and he favors it. Rashi brings the first explanation where he rejects it and Tosafot favors it. Rashi brings the first explanation is that Eid Nodilahem Kodashim is that we don't allow them to be Makriv, Korbanot on the Mizbeach, because he's not a Kohen. One of them is not a Kohen, they can't be Makriv Korbanot. But, Ein Motzim Shalem Yedem, their own Korbanot, you can't force them to give it up to the Mishmar. In general, when you bring up a Korban to the Mikdash, then you have to give it over to that Mishmar that's working. And that Mishmar does it, and then they eat the basar, and they keep the orot, they keep the skins. A Kohen can come up and bring his own korban. A Kohen who has a korban that he wants to bring, he doesn't have to give it up to the Mishmar, he can bring it on his own, he can keep the meat, and he can keep the skins. So over here, what Emotim Yishalahem Yadam Rashi says is, that you don't force them to give up their own kodashim. They don't have to give their kodashim to the Mishmar. They can say, look, we would have brought it ourselves. And we're going to make a shliach to bring our korban, and that kohen that we designate will be the one who brings it for us, and he'll keep it. So we get to choose which kohen brings it, not be defaulted into the mishmar. Rashi does not like it, because he says, how can they make a shliach if they can't do it? You can only make an agent for something that you yourself can do. If you can't do it, then how can you make an agent out of it? So Tosafot disagrees. Tosafot says, when can't you make an agent is in a situation where you can't perform it because there's clear disqualification over here. But over here, if Eliyahu and Avi came now and told us which one was the Kohen, he would be able to do it. And therefore, he can make an agent. I mean, the agency over here is created because for sure one of them is a Kohen. So even though he himself can't do it, that's just because we can't tell which one is the Kohen. But he can create agency because if he knew he was the Kohen, he would be able to do it. So that's how Tosafot answers that problem of Rashi, and therefore he favors that explanation. These are matnot that come out of Chulin. Chulin Be'ima, that you have to give these gifts to the Kohen. The Zroa, right, the foreleg, the Lachaim, the cheeks, and the Keba, the stomach area. That you're patur from, because that's Motzi Mechaver Ola Varaya. Since it's Motzi Mechaver Ola Varaya, you can't get it out of them, they get to keep it. And there's no Isser in eating it, since it's Chulin. U'b'choro Yehi Roe Achi Stev. Their B'chor have to wait until it gets a mum in it. Here, this is some controversy about this, because how can they be Baal Tacher? They're leaving around the Bechor, which if they give it to a Kohen, would be Makriv al Mizbeach, because it's a Bechor Tam, it's a Zman HaMikdash. So how could they hold it out? So some say that it's a case where they jointly owned it. The Eved that was now a Yisrael and the Kohen jointly owned it, and therefore they don't have to give it over. There's no Baal Tacher because of that. Or it's a case where he inherited it from his father, where there is no Baal Tacher. Because when you inherit from your father, there's no Din of Baal Tacher. Yodim alav chumrei kohanim chumrei yisraelim. And therefore we treat them, which the Gemara will discuss in tomorrow's daf, they get the chumrot of being a Kohen and the chumrot of being Israel. They get the chumrot of being both Israel and a Kohen because of the safek. Therefore we make sure that they have both ways. They're both treated as Kohanim and Israelim, the chumra. So very good. There are achronim asked here, why doesn't the Mishnah mention that they're not allowed to go up to Birkat Kohanim? So some of them say that because Bidi Avad, if they did go out for Birkat Kohanim, we wouldn't make them come down. Therefore, the Mishnah doesn't mention it. So, L'chatchil, they shouldn't perform Birkat Kohanim because one of them is not a Kohen. But if they went up there, we can't force them to stop because there's a possibility that they're a Kohen and we wouldn't force them out of it. So that's why some of the Achronim say that it's not mentioned in the Mishnah over here. All right. Meitu Aksherim, Elahanach Mishom Di'aruv Lo Havalu Psulim. The Mishnah terms over here that the ones who got mixed up are called the Tarovet. And the other brothers, which are the uncles and the nephews over here, they call them Ksherim. So in the Mishnah it says the Ksherim passed away, implying that the other two are Psulim. So when it says, just because they got mixed up, they're considered to be Psulim. So now, Amara Papa, Ema Umeitu Avadaim. Ksherim here doesn't mean Kasher, but rather means Vadai. Children who are definitely children of this mother and father, not children who have a Safek associated with them. So the word here, Ksherim, either he's saying to emend the Mishnah and write Vadaim and not Ksherim, or he's saying the word Ksherim here doesn't mean Kasher versus Pasul. Ksherim means Vadai versus Safek. And that's why they're saying, so these Tarovet, it's not Pasul. There's no reason they should be Pasul over here. Okay, now then, Livnei Akala Echad Choleitz. Dafka Michlatz Vada Yivume. In that case, first of all, you do Chalitza, and then Yibum. Ava Yumume Vereshalo. But you can't do Yibum first. The Kapaga B'Yivam Adashuk. The same problem that we had in the previous Mishnah, which is that if you allow him to do Yibum first, there's a risk that that's not his Yavam, but rather his niece. And then his niece had to have Yibum from the other brothers that were there, and since he didn't clear her out, he's Pogea B'Yavam Adashuk. So they say, do Chalitza first, one of them, and then the other one marries her. Either it's his Yavama or it's his niece, and then it's fine because she's been released by the other brother. Kohenet Shinitarev. Chelek Echad Pshita. Of course, they can only get one chelek between them, because only one of them is a Kohen. One is a Kohen, one of them is an Eved Kanani. So of course they can only get one chelek between them. Rashi has a slightly different girsa over here. Rashi has a girsa similar to others, which is chelek echad salkadatcho. They should get one portion. So now, chelek echad here, either it's pshita. Tosafot explains what does that mean, chelek echad pshita. Perish, pshita, she'en lemela chelek echad. Of course they don't get more than one portion. Only one of them is a Kohen. So why should they get more than one portion? Rashi on the other hand says, chelek echad salkadatcho is what do you mean they get one portion? How can they force someone to give them a portion? The Balim are always the ones who get to make the decision about who they give the truma to. They can't force truma out of anybody. So ema chelek keechad. That's what it means. It means they get a portion like one. So that doesn't mean that they get one. According to Rashi, that means they can't force a portion out of anybody. But if someone grants them a portion, they together can only get one portion. Or according to Tosafot, that means if they go to the Gorin to collect, they can only demand one portion, but they have to go together. Because only together are they entitled to a single portion, not separately. So it's non kemando amar ein chokim truma le'eved. So now this Mishnah is like the one who says that you're not allowed to distribute truma to an eved elim kein rabo imo, unless his master is with him. Titania, we have a brayta ein chokim truma le'eved elim kein rabo imo. Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says you cannot distribute truma to an eved unless his master is with him. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Yochoshi Omarim Kohen Ani Tnuli Bishvil Atzmi. The individual can say, listen, if I'm a Kohen, give it to me because I'm a Kohen. If I'm Eved Kohen, I need Tnuli Bishvil Rabbi. And if I'm not a Kohen, give it to me because of my master. So that shows you that Rabbi Yossi believes that he could collect, even without his master being there, he could have gotten the truma. So then Gemara explains why this is. Because, Bimkomosh Rabbi Yehuda Amalim Truma Lo Yuchsin. In the place of Rabbi Yehuda, if someone collected truma, he was assumed to be a Kohen Miuchas. So therefore, if you distributed a truma to an eved, without his master being there, people would assume that this individual was a kohen miyuchas. So in order to avoid that problem, the master had to be there with the eved in order to know that he was an eved and not a kohen. So that's what the case was in Rabbi Yehuda's area. But the promotion of Rabbi Yossi, in Rabbi Yossi's region, they didn't automatically assume if you got truma that you were a kohen miyuchas. Therefore, Avadim could get Truma, because nobody would assume just because you're getting Truma that you're automatically a Kohen Miuchas. Could be that you're an Eved. So that was the difference in their opinions, had to do with the nature of the culture there, which is how did they view people who were getting Truma? In Rabbi Yehuda's region, they viewed people who got Truma as Kohen Miuchasim. Therefore, an Eved can't go alone because then he might be considered a Kohen Miuchas. But in Rabbi Yossi's region, the culture was that if you got Truma, that didn't say anything about you as being a Kohen Miuchas. Therefore, anybody could go collect the truma, even an eved without his rabo, because he wouldn't be considered a kohen. Nobody would think he's a kohen just because he got truma. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok. Meyimai lo yati ele edut echad. My whole lifetime, I never gave testimony about someone being a kohen, except once. Velu eved kuna al pi. It says, and because of me, they ended up making an eved into a kohen. Where it says, helu sakadacha? They actually made an eved into a kohen because of him? But hashta b'emtam shel tzadikim ein hakadosh baruch hu mevi takala yadam. Here we have a story by the chamor of Pinchas ben Yair, where even animals don't do the wrong thing. By animals, the tzadikim don't do the wrong thing. Tzadikim atzman lo koshkein. Certainly, a tzadik would not have tripped up and caused an eved to become a kohen. Eleima bikshu lalot eved lekuna api, that they wanted to make someone into a kohen because of me, but they didn't. Meaning that I was saved. It didn't happen. But why did this happen? Why was he testifying? Because Chazabatre, the Rabbi Yossi, he saw this individual getting truma in Rabbi Yossi's region. Vazavasi batrayed Rabbi Yehuda. And then he was in the region of Rabbi Yehuda and he testified, yeah, this guy got truma. But he didn't realize that there was a difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi's region. And therefore, in Rabbi Yehuda's region, where they said anybody got truma was miyuchas tekuna, but he was saying this about a guy who lived in Rabbi Yossi's region. So Rabbi Yossi's region, he could have been an eved. Who knows what he was? But he testified in Rabbi Yehuda's region about a eved that was in Rabbi Yossi's region. And that's what the confusion was over here. Now, you see the Aleph in the Bach there. Tosafot over here discusses whether this should be in the Girsa. Tosafot has a shita all over Shas that this issue about a tzaddikim making a mistake is only true with eating, isur. When someone ingests something that is asur. Because that's something that's very personal. And something that is very close to you, and ingesting something that is asur is considered to be ma'us and very bad and difficult. So therefore, this protection that is afforded here, according to Tosafot, is only in terms of ingesting isur. And that's why the behemoth of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair wouldn't eat something that didn't have shumot u'masrot separated from it. And that's the same protection that's afforded to tzaddikim, is that they won't eat or ingest something that is asur. Over here, that's not the case. The case here has nothing to do with ingestion. Here it has to do with being maleh. Somebody to the kuhuna, which has nothing to do with the tzaddik eating something. Therefore, Tosafot eliminates this question from the Gemara and says it's not relevant over here, because tzaddikim are not afforded that protection. This has nothing to do with eating, therefore it has nothing to do with that protection, and therefore he leaves out these two lines. And then the Rabbeinu Tam, in the Sefer Yosher, I think, and then Tosafot in other places in Shas, says that it's not only the tzaddik himself eating, but if he causes someone else to eat Isur. Over here, he's going to cause someone else to eat Isur. He's causing this Eved, who otherwise is not a Kohen, now to be classified as a Kohen Miuchas. And then even after, quote unquote, he's freed, or he's like, oh, he's going to go ahead and then eat Truma, when it's a sore for him to eat Truma, to take Truma. So therefore, there's an Isur of ingestion there, even though it's not him, it's someone else. That protection is afforded, and therefore they leave this girsa in because they say, even though it's not the tzaddik himself personally, but even the tzaddik will not cause others to ingest that which is asur. So therefore they leave the girsa in. Alright, Tarabanan. Asara in chokim lahem chuma bebeit agranot. There are 10 individuals from which we do not distribute truma in the Goren. Ve'eluhein, and then the Gemara will go through each one of them. Cheresh, Shoteh v'Katan. Cheresh, Shoteh v'Katan, because they're not B'nai Deah. We know that already, so therefore we don't distribute it to them. Tomtom v'Androginus. Tomtom is someone who does not display any sexual organs, so we don't know if they're male or female. And Androginus is someone who has both sexual organs. Ve'evet, which is what we just discussed now, that an Eved of a Kohen, we don't distribute to him. Aisha, a woman, which is discussed earlier in the Masechta, which Gemara is going to come back to again, we don't distribute to a woman. Ve'arel, a Kohen who does not have a Brit Milah. Ve'atamei, a Kohen who is Tamei. Ve'nosei Isha, she'enu genelo. And someone who married a woman who's inappropriate for the Kehuna, you don't give him at the Goren. Now, V'chulan, Mishagrim lehem lebatehem. All of them you can send it home. You can't give it to them directly, but you can send it to their homes. Chutz mi tamei v'nosei isha she'enu ugenet lo. Except for the exception of the one who is tamei, the kohen is tamei, and the one who marries a woman who is not appropriate for him. Because in that case, both of them, it's a knas. And on that side, we're not going to waive the knas. We're not going to send it to his house, otherwise there's no knas anymore. So here, they're going to uphold it and say you can't send it to their house at all. Now, Gemara says, bishlam ha-cheresh shoteh v'katan la b'nei deyaninu. The reason for cheresh shoteh v'katan is that because they are not b'nei deya. Rashi says, okay, so they're not b'nei deya. What does that mean? Ziluta de truma la chalek lehem begorin lehem kol. It's a denigration of the truma to hand truma to people that are not b'nei deya. That's what Rashi says the reason is. Tosfot says, okay, great, then why are you sending it to their house? How does that change the matter when you send it to their house? So Tosfot over there says there must be an apitropos. There must be somebody who's their guardian in the house. Yeah, they're outside now, but there's a guardian in the house. You send it to the house, the guardian will take care of it, and it's not a ziluta anymore. Tosfot hints at another approach here, which seems to me to be the more obvious approach is, that the reason you don't give it to them that b'nei deya is because they're not going to be shomer the truma b'tara. You have a risk that they're going to make it tmeya. Oh, now you have the same problem. How are you going to send it to their house? The answer will be the same, which is that they have a apitropos. They have a guardian in the house who makes sure that it stays okay. You can't give it to them because they're not going to protect it from becoming tmeya. And that's the problem here by the cheresh shoteh v'katan not being a b'nei deya. Tomtom v'adroginus nami b'riya b'fnei atzmaninu. They are their own creation, and therefore Rashi says again, ziluta de kodoshim. Again, it's a denigration of the kodoshim to give it to them because they are not defined, they are awkward in some way, and because of that, we're not going to give them the truma. Or, they're biria b'fnei atzva, which means that they don't have entitlement here, because they're not necessarily a zachar kihuna. They might be a woman. They might be a man. A woman you can't give, a man you can give, so for that reason, we don't grant them that. Evan nami. Why don't you give an Eved at the Goren? This is like the places of Rabbi Yehuda, which is Dilma Atila Sukei Mitruma LeYuchsin. Because you might think then, if you give it to the Eved by himself, that he is a Kohen Miuchas. Arel v'tamei mishum demi'ise. And Arel and Tamei because they are disgusting. Now, Tamei is because it's somewhat of a Knas. Everybody becomes Tamei at some point, but the fact that he wasn't Shomer himself from the Tumah, therefore we're Konesim that he doesn't get it because he wasn't so careful. He should have been much more careful about the Tumah as a Kohen, and he wasn't careful, therefore there's a Knas that we won't give him Truma. Arel, obviously in the case here, Arel is a case where he's an Ones. It's a case where his brothers died, Machmat Mila, but because of the nature of someone who is an Arel, being considered Maus, we saw that early in the Masechta, even though it's not his fault, and even though we can't blame him, nevertheless, we don't give it to him because of the fact that it's still Maus that the Truma be given to him. But there is a difference here, which is, we send it home. By the Arel, we will send it to his house. By the Tamei, we will not send it to his house. The Tamei, where it's his fault, at least somewhat his fault or possibly his fault, therefore we have a knas and we don't send it to his house. The Arel, we will send it to his house. Now, why would you send it to his house? An Arel is not allowed to eat chuma either way. That is because an Arel is mizake, his avadim and shvachot, all his kinyan kaspo, can eat chuma because of him, even though he himself cannot eat chuma because he can't have a milah. So we will send it to his home because over there they will be able to use it or utilize it in the house, even though he himself can't eat it. The reason we don't give it to someone who married an inappropriate woman is we're trying to force him to divorce the woman and separate. How do you do that? You don't grant him truma anymore. You disqualify him from truma. You take away his livelihood because that's the way the Kohen got his food, was through truma. If you take that away, it's going to put pressure on him to divorce this woman. Elisha, my time alo. The only one we don't understand is a woman. Why can't a woman who's a Kohenet go ahead and collect Truma at the Goren? So pligi bar a papa ravuna braid ver Yeshua machloket amoraim chadamar mishum grusha v'chadamar mishum yichud. One of them says it's because of grusha. The problem is that as long as she's married to the kohen, she's entitled to truma. Once he divorces her, she's not entitled to truma. Maybe this guy won't know that she got divorced and continue to give her truma. So that's why we don't want the women going out and collecting. The other one says the problem of yichud, the gorin is a empty place, a place where people aren't there. So if she goes out to collect in the gorin, there's risk that she'll be miyached with the owner of the gorin. So we don't want women going out there because of yichud. My benayu, what's the nafkamina between these two? Ikamenayu beidori demekariv lamata v'lo shchichi beuinche. It's a gorin that is close to the city, but there's not a lot of traffic over there. So since there's not a lot of traffic, there's still a problem of yichud. But it's close enough to the city that if she got divorced, he'd know about it. Because the news would have traveled to him. Inami demerchak v'shchichi v'ainche. Or it's a gorin that's far away from the city, but has heavy traffic. So since it's far away from the city, he won't hear. If the woman got divorced, he'd have no idea. There's not a problem of yichud because there's heavy traffic in that area. Now, a lot of the Rishonim ask over here, why don't we worry about the fact that Eved, when you give it to an Eved, not that Maledi Yuchsin, but maybe that the Adon freed him. That the master freed the Eved. Why don't we have that same chashash over here? You're talking about a grusha. Why don't we say the same thing by an Eved? Why don't we worry about the fact that maybe his master freed him? And you have the same issue. So there are two possibilities. One is that freeing an Eved is not a common occurrence. Because there's an Isser. According to many of the Tanaim, there's an Isser to free an Eved Kanani. And therefore, we don't worry about that incident. Or the other possibility, Tosfot suggests over here, that if an Eved is freed, he won't want to act like an Eved anymore. That's a big deal. An Eved got his freedom. He's not going to come and pretend to be an Eved to get Shuma because that goes against him gaining his freedom and looking like a free man. He doesn't want to be treated like an Eved anymore. So it's counter to his status now, and therefore he won't act like an Eved. We don't have to worry about it.
And we're not choshesh that he possibly was sold to Israel, because then the obligation to feed the Eved is on his master, the Israel. And there's no way the Eved is going to sin and go and take Truma when he's not supposed to, when the obligation's on his master. Ein adam choteh v'lo lo. Person doesn't sin to the benefit of someone else. It's his master's problem, not his problem now to feed him.
Right. V'chulan mishagrim lehem nebeteim. Chutz mitamei v'nosei yisha she'enu genet lo. You send it home to all of these individuals, except for a tamei and a person who marries an inappropriate woman. Aval arel mishagrim leh. But in arel, you do send it to him. My taima. Mishum danis. Because it wasn't his fault. He couldn't do it. His brothers died machmat mila. He can't do a mila. So tamei nami hanis. And tamei also could be a case he was standing around, someone passed away, he became tamei. Where it says, hainofish unsei. By the case of Arel, it's really out of his hands. He has no control over this whatsoever. Whereas, by the tamei, ailo nofish unsei. It's not really so significant his ones over here, because he could have controlled it a little bit. Maybe he became tamei intentionally, could have walked out, he could have prevented it. By Tuma, a person has somewhat control. It can't be all the time, but there's a certain amount of control, or he can prevent himself from being in situations of Tuma. So again, it's not perfect, but it's not as much of an ones, and therefore, we do not grant him the ability to get Tuma sent to his house, because we say, try to keep yourself tahor. That's the more important thing over here. But with the Arel, where it's completely out of his control, therefore we send it back to his home, in order that his family and his avadim can partake in this truma. Okay, we're going to stop here. 14 lines down on top of Kuf, Amud Aleph.